WOWDLP, Tacoma Park.
You meet a lot of nice people, you know, traveling from city to city. Like a few weeks ago, a lady came in, caught the show. After the show, she spent a few minutes chatting with the entertainers. And she says, come by the house. Let me fix a home-cooked meal for you. You can get away from eating in the restaurants. Fine gesture. I accept. I go by. Lady has a couple of kids. I get there a little late. She's already fed the kids. She's running their bath. She says generally she gives them their bath. They watch television, then into bed. Television doesn't work. Kids don't know. They sit there, wait for it to light up. When they fall asleep, she puts them in bed. 3 years the television hasn't worked. What strikes me as unusual is she runs the water in the tub, and she puts the boy and the girl in the tub together. I'm watching this. I said, damn. Boy and the girl in the tub together. I'm surprised. I was 25 before I got in on a set like this. They're standing there in the tub, looking at each other. She goes back into the kitchen. I sneak behind the door. I'm going to watch. I'm watching through the crack in the door. The girl says to her brother, what's that? And he said, where? She said, right there. He said, I don't know. She said, well, what's it for? He said, I told you I don't know. She said, can I touch it? He said, heck no, you broke yours off already.
Well, thank you for sharing that. This is our sense of humor show, so we started with a little plug here by Bobby Hill and by Flip Wilson. And you are tuned to WWGLP Tacoma Park 94.3 on your FM station. Good morning, everyone. We hope you're having a great start to your day. We hope we can get you juiced to talking about art. Yes, we'll be talking about art again, like we do every other Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. This is Tom Xenakis, and I'm with Sheila Blake and with the hosts of the Artist Experience radio show.
Good morning. Artist Experience is an hour-long radio show dedicated to looking at art. We hope that Tom and I can introduce our listeners to what we've been looking at and help you when you visit the exhibit, create in your soul, in your own experience, your own work of art. The Artist Experience radio show has a unique mission. We look into the inward experiences of engagement with art, and we desire to make them explicit, both in the creator and in you, our listeners. Tom and I are trying to demystify art, making your art adventure richer and more enjoyable. Whenever you experience the visual, we try to bring them to light, unfolding into larger, brighter, more richly contoured surfaces, transforming vague awareness into definite knowledge. We have an Artist Experience page on Facebook where we put the images of the things we're talking about. You should really look at it if you can while you're listening. It's also a place where we'd love our listeners to give us ideas and feedback. If you can stream the program, you can stream the program at TacomaRadio.org. Also, we're putting podcasts of this show on my website, SheilaBlake.com, and on ArtistExperience.com so that you can listen anytime, and the podcast can be also found on iTunes.
Well, we all in the D.C. metro area know we can use a strong jolt of humor right now. Things are getting awfully serious around here in many arenas of political, social, and economic themes. Yes, the Artist Experience radio program is going to venture into humor. Humor can ease the tensions, at least temporarily, and we're going to give our listeners a dose of that today. Presently, at the National Gallery of Art on the Mall, there's an exhibition titled Sense of Humor. The exhibition is on the ground floor, and it's a small exhibition which goes until January 6, 2019. So you have several months to get a good laugh seeing visual art that captures humor. This is a visual arts program, and we say beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. In this show, beauty and humor are in the eyes of the beholder. Humor in painting and sculpture is a rare thing in the history of art. Humor has come through in a host of other visual genres in the history of art that this exhibition highlights: printmaking, drawing, caricature, comics, cartoon, and other media are included. We love to laugh, Sheila. I know we often do this on this show. Humor is an integral part of the human condition and experience. I laugh at the simplest things, but humor and art, what do you feel about that?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't really generally think of art as funny. I mean, I am in museums a lot, and I would be surprised to see a couple laughing at a painting, unless it's like my 9-year-old could do that kind of in front of a humor. Picasso or something. Yeah. Well, maybe a couple of kids might be laughing at the Philip Guston or the Alexander Calder, who is full of gentle wit, but he's not included in this show. But mostly art isn't funny, like a good joke. The humor in this show is mostly satire, which is a very sophisticated kind of humor. It relieves stress, it criticizes social norms, and draws attention to both particular and wider issues in society. Satire is definitely part of the story of art. The humor in this show is calling attention to hypocrisy, to the foibles of men.
Wait, how about women? How about the foibles of women, Sheila?
All right, you got me there, because the women seems like their only role was as sex objects or as crones.
In this exhibition.
And men are often portrayed as ridiculous buffoons who are making fun of physical abnormalities. I honestly don't know how to react to this with my PC mind.
Well, humor in painting and in sculpture, as I said, was really difficult to pull off. But several fine artists in the history of the world, like Honoré Daumier, which we'll talk about later, Salvador Dali, Philip Guston, Klaus Oldenburg in the pop era, and Roy Lichtenstein in the pop era, have given us hints of humor in their work. But again, humor is in the ears and the eyes of the beholder. Your audience is the key to this, and that sensitivity to your audience is imperative. And that's a tough thing to pull off in art. Coincidentally, this week in the news, Sheila, I don't know if you heard about this, on the internet, there was something visual that I thought was very funny. But then I found out it was supposed to be serious. Oh, no, did I really make a mistake on this one? DC, we have a problem. Let's talk about this problem when something serious is interpreted as humorous or vice versa. Some of our listeners might have heard about this. A Utah-based artist named John McLaughlin painted a canvas titled Crossing the Swamp. And it's inspired by the classic American painting Washington Crossing the Delaware, very famous, by Emanuel Lütze from 1851, who was a German-American immigrant who painted that masterpiece that we all know. Well, in this new painting, Crossing the Swamp, you have President Trump holding a lantern with all the cabinet members and players in his administration rowing a boat across a swamp, which coincidentally is in front of the Capitol of the United States. Okay, so my immediate reaction and glance that I thought it was supposed to be a joke. I thought it was a joke. But it's a real, and I thought it was a bad parody of anti-swamp. Anti-Trump. Well, anyway, when I read the article about the artist, he actually is an avid Trump supporter. And he states on Twitter to never give up, never lower your light, the light that Trump is holding. Never stop till the swamp is dry. Well, I was shocked. And here is why I thought this is a bad idea when it comes to art. You have to be very careful about what you portray. By thinking it was funny, and the painting was really not, and here's why I thought it was funny, because I thought maybe it was some kind of Trump's statement about, you know, right, draining a swamp. Yeah, mm-hmm. Satire, because mm-hmm. Washington, coincidentally, in geographical terms, is a swamp. It was a swamp. Well, firstly, this dude that painted the painting, and he's entitled to paint whatever he wants, and he's absolutely entitled to expressing his political opinion, which is totally okay. Those are not the problems. The problem is he parodied a very famous painting that symbolizes many things about history, and George Washington being one of them. He wasn't a saint, George Washington, but he is the father of our country, and President Trump hasn't really earned that yet in historical means, so he made an equation there that's really kind of not really correct. And then in art history, when someone holds a lantern, it is symbolic of enlightenment and searching. That's just the way it is in art history, from an artist's point of view. Most notably, Jesus was painted that way as an historical, spiritual, and religious figure. He is often depicted that way with a scriptural reference, Jesus as the light of the world. So this artist, John McLaughlin, is he associating Christ as Trump? Well, that's a really heavy-duty thing to kind of get your wires crossed with. with, because, I mean, is Trump about to save us? Okay, so that's two. Number three, in the painting, Vice President Pence is holding a flag, which is not tattered, but it's certainly painted badly, and it looks like it had just been pulled out of a dumpster. And that's disrespectful, and it's also insensitive to the symbol of our country. So we have something that I thought was a joke, which was actually really serious, and here's where art and humor get a little sketchy. And lastly, the boat is a rowboat, and the players of the administration are... some of them are rowing the boat, and Ben Carson is one of them. Well, the former brilliant cardiac surgeon from Johns Hopkins, Ben Carson, is rowing the boat in what appears to be in the opposite direction of the others. Notably, also Sarah Sanders is rowing. Well, I found this truly insensitive on many levels. Firstly, Ben Carson is an African American, and he's rowing the boat. It's kind of an allusion to slavery, and that's very super insensitive. And then Sarah Huckabee Sanders, a woman who's constantly kowtowing and defending in a vomitous way the voice of the administration, is also rowing. Well, that's also subservient female, very insensitive as well. So I think we have to be very, very careful as artists to try to show something in a serious or humorous light, because the audience is going to pick that apart. And so that's the kind of the goal of my 5-minute thing here, is that you have to be very careful as an artist to try to convey something humorous or serious or in bad taste, because symbolism is something that could be degrading and inappropriate, and that's tough when you start parroting a very, very famous painting. Sheila, what about this context of humor and how it relates to the audience in social and historical terms? Did the exhibition have works that and topics that were funny, but not necessarily now? What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's the big problem for me with this show, is how to react. You know, the early humor subjects of the Renaissance deal with ridiculing the nobility, the church, the government, and the peasants, who were shown sunk into sin and debauchery. The early etchings in this show are caricatures with fantastic imaginations, like the work of Jacques Caillot. He made more than 1,400 etchings that chronicled the life of his period, featuring soldiers, clowns, drunkards, gypsies, beggars, as well as court life. He also etched many religious and military images, and many prints featured extensive landscapes in their backgrounds. So, but it's impossible for me to think of these etchings as humor, because my training in political correctness, like, I'm trained not to make fun of anybody. And except, well, there are some exceptions.
Like me.
Well,
the co-host.
I would never do that to your face.
Oh, thanks a lot, Sheila.
But they show us life, but our perspective has changed so drastically, so that deformities, or rather, you know, changes in bodies from the norm, that might be a reaction of concern or curiosity, or just instructions to open our minds to the varieties of humans, but really, really not a cause for laughter. So many of the qualities of the weaknesses of men, which are basically the seven deadly sins, are represented through mythology, like the engraving by Giuseppe de Ribera. Silenus, the son of Pan, is an older figure, drunk, slovenly, being fed from a gigantic bottle of wine by Bacchus, while being mocked by satyrs. I mean, why the sudden modesty of the fig leaf? This guy is gross.
That's the funniest part.
I know, it is. Like, There's an earlier etching by René Bovin on the same subject, and that seems to be a favorite thing, you know, theme. Remembering in the Dutch masterpieces that we talked about several months ago, with drunk women asleep and being jeered at. And except for their artistic virtuosity, it's very uncomfortable even then to look at those subjects in the Dutch masterpieces. So I was interested in how these prints were seen by the general population. Some were standalone prints, which were sold in print shops. And some were political cartoons, like the works by Daumier, were printed in newspapers. So during the Reformation, Martin Luther understood that the distribution of prints was a great way to enlighten people and also to promote literacy. The modern newspaper is a European invention. The precedents for the modern newspaper were the handwritten news sheets that circulated widely in Venice as early as 1566. These weekly news sheets were filled with information on wars and politics in Europe. The first printed newspapers were published weekly in Germany from 1609. Newspapers developed in the 17th century. They were information sheets for businessmen. But the early 19th century, by that time, many cities in Europe, as well as in North and South America, published newspapers. By the 1830s, high-speed presses could print thousands of newspapers cheaply, allowing for low daily costs. Innovation and mass distribution made it a fabulous vehicle for societal change. The free press is essential to our democracy, I have to say.
Yes,
that.
And that yes. is absolutely yeah. true. Well, the beginnings of humor in this caricature deal with subjects that, again, that Sheila alluded to, they might not actually be humorous. And so humor fits in a social context, in a time, in an historical framework. And it's a statement about those times. And the audience certainly is very important. Who is your audience in humor? You know, that's really, really true. I can tell a lot of stories about inappropriate humor that I said about people I didn't know, and they were horrified that I would bring this up at dinner parties. So, you know, I wasn't invited back, but that's okay. Food wasn't that great. Anyway, the exhibition starts off with some fine drawings and prints of grotesques. And the most famous, of course, by Leonardo da Vinci. The exhibition has a fine copy of two grotesque heads by Francesco Melzi, after Leonardo, from the 1520s. Other grotesques appear in the show, and are they funny? In their day, they may be, but certainly not today. I see them as wonderful studies of unusual faces, but not particularly humorous if you're sensitive about other people's feelings and other people's possibly physical abnormalities. There is some speculation that Leonardo da Vinci, in his sense of humor, made up these faces or exaggerated the features to create the grotesques. Not necessarily people walking around will look like that. There is an allusion to the American and European freak shows that came later that were curiosities and legendaries. Mm-hmm. And are they funny now? Well, they're against the law, actually, to have a freak show. There's a wonderful series of drawings in pen and ink of hunchbacks, the gobi, as they're called in French, by Jacques Callot, who was a terrific draftsman. And there's other examples of drunkenness. The exhibition has several examples of this kind of illustrated drunken humor. Well, the concept of drunkenness is as old as it gets with the mythologies of Egypt, Rome, and Greece, the cults of Dionysus and Bacchus, the same, you know, god of merriment from Greek and Roman mythology. They have a strong root in painting and sculpture, narrating the myths and legend. Being out of control or letting your normal guard down via alcohol was a social taboo and often a sign of weakness and a social taboo of wildness, rudeness, and eventual bawdiness or even impotence. So, you know, the ancients looked at drunkenness in a little different light than we do today. So, drunkenness could be funny, but in the 21st century, drunkenness and certainly addiction take on a much more severe ethos for obvious reasons. Again, the humor fits in that social context. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the exhibition kind of keeps you on the fence historically.
It's exactly. It's on the fence the whole time. So the invention of printmaking in the 1400s led to an unprecedented proliferation of artistic imagery, and which by the 16th century was transforming taste and culture throughout Europe. Because it was a primarily black and white medium, sometimes sepia, the gestural line, the attention to detail, the virtuosity of bringing the imagination to life was everything. The 17th century was the golden age of printmaking. The artists were developing techniques of woodcut, engraving, etching, mezzotint, and aquatint, and combining these techniques. The artists were experimenting, and it just led to really printmaking as an art form. And later in the 19th century, lithography became a cheap and beautiful way of reproduction, as the Belle Epoque artists like Lautrec and Bonnard, and we've talked about this a lot, used lithographs for posters. Actually, printmaking has experienced myriad golden ages. Following World War II, innovations in technology and popular thought invited another resurgence of printmaking in the United States among the abstract expressionists and the pop artists and the minimalists through the 1970s and until now. So new printers and publishers, which included Universal Limited Art Editions, Gemini, Crown Point Press, and Tamarind, these are studios that invite artists to collaborate with them and assist them in the techniques of printmaking and to experiment in order to create with large format lithography and other various printed media to create a new art form. The thing about printmaking in this way is that all along in the process, you have the prints. So the artists can develop their vision and also track their process. As a viewer, you can track the artist's thinking to the final creation, and it is a fascinating thing to do.
Yeah, Sheila, thanks so much for sharing about that. I had kind of forgotten that, actually, that's one of the real strengths of this exhibition, actually, is that if you enjoy the process of printmaking, and there's a whole myriad of techniques, as Sheila mentioned, they're there in the exhibition, and they're done quite masterfully. I mean, these artists were really terrific printmakers, and they probably worked with a team in those days. And that for a printmaker and somebody that likes to draw, this exhibition is actually really, really outstanding. Well, there's also a lot of outstanding works in the gestural quality and the intimacy of the drawings, which I think is worth it in the exhibition. The gestural quality of a work is imbued with these intuitive marks, usually done quickly with pen and ink, a brush, and possibly an ink pen. So there's a lot of those also in the show. And the drawing is done fast with qualities of energy, emotion, and economy. And, of course, essence. The essence of that humorous moment is definitely captured in a lot of these works. In the caricature subject, it's done in an honest and expressive way. And, of course, that leads to the comic cartoon, which has so many qualities, even in a contemporary anime and gaming art, video art. So when you look at these drawings, you can see how they evolved into contemporary media that is very important to a lot of our listeners. And certainly the energy and the economy and the emotion and all that essence is what makes really something possibly humorous and intuitive. Certainly, you know, video and gaming art doesn't have to be just humorous. I mean, it could be downright serious, but it does lead to that kind of gestural quality. Sheila, we talked about drunkenness that was shown in the show, but there's a lot of bawdiness and sexual illusion. I was going to talk about this, Sheila, this topic of the sex in the exhibition, but, you know, if I rambled on this one, you know, about sex and humor, probably the whole show I would dominate it, and you couldn't get a word in, edgewise, so I'm going to let you talk about that, okay?
Sure. So I'm going to talk about the subjects of this satire, the seven deadly sins: pride, greed, wrath, sloth, lust, envy, and gluttony. The engraving by Peter van de Heyden after Hieronymus Bosch, and I want to say that a lot of these prints are from artists who use the preliminary drawings of who we consider very famous artists like Bosch to
take it further in the humor end.
And also take it further in its development as a print. So you see this a lot, but there's a wonderful engraving of the Ship of Fools, which was done in 1559. And the Ship of Fools had become a popular metaphor for the hypocrisy of society. It's a parody of the Christian church, which is the ship is inadequate, the pilot is feeble, and the passengers are dissolute. And there's a big suggestion of sex trafficking in this particular
print. Yeah, that was a very complicated print.
It is. And then there are two etchings by Sebald Baham and another by Gross Pence, which are depicting lechery, sex, and there's a kind of bitterness which caused the artist to be accused of heresy and blasphemy. And these artists were labeled the godless artists. And they are gross. They are.
Yeah, they kind of go in a kind of a gross direction. Yeah. There. Well, there's a dark Mezzotin print that caught my eye by the Dutch artist Cornelis Dusart from 1695. And it has a Latin title, which is Sereris Bacchic Amicus, which is means a friend of Sirius and Bacchus. Well, this piece is wonderfully drawn. It illustrates a paunchy, happy camper toasting us with a fruity beverage, and he's ready for action. And he's holding this big, thick candle protruding from his belly. Well, I found that pretty obvious. And his mouth is open like he might be burping, and he might be singing the classic rock song, Come On Baby, Light My Fire. It had that look, you know, come on, baby, light my fire. And this guy is definitely ready for action. And he's drunk. He's got this sly smile. He's kind of adorable in a way, but he's definitely bawdy. And it's a good piece in the show. And on that note, we're going to have to take a short station break. So let's take a short station break and listen to some comedy. We'll see you back in a little bit.
You know, somebody said to me, yesterday at Confidential, I was coming over on the jet, and they told me, said, Mom said, man, this ass me Confidential. Said, Mom, do you really mean it when you say you like young men? You love young men? I said, son, I'm too old to love. But I like young men. I said, that old love mess is out. I say, but I like young men. If I'm going to do some liking, I might as well like. I'm not going to tell nobody I like no old man. I mean it. I don't. I ain't got but one nerve, and they get on that. Pay a young man's way from here to California than to tell an old man the distance. Can't no old man do nothing for me. He can't do nothing for himself. Man went up to get married. Young couple, man, ma'am, say, all right, $2. Boy say, here's my dollar. Ain't nobody putting out nothing but tombstones, and you have to drop dead to get one of them. Two hipsters stand up on the corner. Lead against the building, one of them with his mouth wide open. The other one say, man, you better close your mouth because there's a mouse on your shoulder fixing to crawl down your throat. The other one say, let him come on, man. I dig him the most. A cat just went down ahead of him.
So I'm still laughing. welcome back. You're listening to WOWD Tacoma Park, 94.3 FM.
Oh, thanks, Bobby Hill, for that. We got to get back on track here. The exhibition, at the National Gallery highlights truly outstanding artists and draftsmen from France, Spain, and England. And there were the hotbeds of social, economic, and political change in the 18th and 19th century. We have William Hogarth, Goya, Daumier, Gilray. These were great artists, painters, printmakers, sculptors, illustrators. And they were absolutely fearless in attacking the ills of their society. societies with poignant and powerful works. The meat of the exhibition lies here with well-executed art and humor, and they come together brilliantly in the middle part of this exhibition.
Mm. Okay, so here's Goya. Goya and Daumier were both, they were just both fantastically gifted. They had sharp minds and they had a need to communicate, and they both had a direct link from their brain to their pen. So whatever they're thinking just comes out so naturally. And Goya was a Spanish Romantic painter and printmaker. He is considered the most important Spanish artist of the late 18th and early 19th centuries. And throughout his long career, he was a chronicler of his era. He was immensely successful in his lifetime and is often referred to as both the last of the old masters and the first of the moderns. Goya became a court painter to the Spanish crown in 1786, and this early portion of his career is marked by portraits of the Spanish aristocracy and royalty and tapestry designs for the royal palace. Later in life, he had a series of illnesses that left him deaf, and in his later years, he was really isolated. One of Goya's prints in the shows two pretty women backed by two crones sweeping out plucked little atrocious bird people from the room. The title contains a pun. The Spanish word desplumar means to pluck, and it means the same as to fleece in English. Contemporary viewers recognize the clues that these were prostitutes and the repulsive creatures on their feet with their sweeping out are customers. And so the prostitutes are sweeping their plucked customers to shoo them out of the way, hoping to make room for new clients. Their baldness of the clients, also to pluck, might mean that they're suffering from syphilis. I think it's so interesting that even within the confined medium of etching, the vision of Goya comes through as that he is such a distinct artist, and that's also true of Daumier, but not so much of the other artists. In the case of Daumier and Goya, their quick strokes are as individual as handwriting.
Oh, absolutely. And we're going to get on to Daumier, who is one of my heroes. But there's also a work in the show that was I found very hysterical, and it was by Eugene Hippolyte Forrest from 1834, and it's titled The Devil's Artillery, and it's a lithograph. It's an attack of the French monarch, King Louis-Philippe's administration, and his interior minister, Comte de Gaulle. Well, this is very well done. It's a beautiful drawing, but it's a little raunchy and there's a bit of bite to it. The cartoon was so popular and powerful at the time that they had to really make new censorship laws that were created so that these artists would not attack the French political monarchy anymore. It was so well received. And it's a hoot because here the king is igniting the minister's butt with a fuse, and it's and he's about to light the fuse and all these soldiers are spewing out of his mouth. It's quite funny. It's a bit raunchy, but the expressions on the interior minister's face with these glasses that look like scissors, it's actually very, very funny, even in a modern context about monarchies and leaders in charge.
All right, we're making our point here. I want to say that Daumier is the ultimate political artist. When he was 15 years old, he was beginning to produce lithographs. He couldn't, of course, like as a 15-year-old, make a living from painting or from sculpture, as he had set out to do. So he accepted commissions for lithographs, which were portraits and cartoons of morals and manners. There's a pen and ink with crayon and watercolor of an actor posing in front of a mirror. It's just perfect.
Oh, that's amazing.
And
the drawing.
Probably my favorite, just because it references our show, Plein Air Painting, is the work with that title, Landscape Artists at Work. And it is funny. It's two artists, plein air painters, lying on the grass in the shade, and their umbrellas are shielding their abandoned, partly finished landscapes from the sun. It's beautifully and simply composed with the figures in shadow in the foreground on the lower third of the of the print. And then the top two-thirds is sunlight with cast shadows from the umbrellas. He's a great composer. With Daumier, it's his talent for drawing and his sharp mind that are so perfectly fused.
Well, that piece, Landscape mm-hmm. Artists at Work, is just a hoot for any artist that, you know, thinks about going out in the landscape. And, of course, we had fun with that show on the plein air painting most recently. Honoré Daumier, the French artist, steals the show. It's important to note that this French artist, who lived from 1808 to 1879, was not only a great painter and printmaker, but he was also a sculptor and a caricature artist, and he was the pioneer of French commentary in the 19th century. The works in his exhibition, and there are quite a few, are outstanding. He was a prolific artist, and his genius was only recognized after his death because he was quite infamous among the French establishment in his lifetime. In the exhibition, the most famous work of his is titled The Legislative Belly from 1834, and it's another lithograph, which is a print made on soft stone with a kind of grease pencil or marker. And in this work, he mocks the conservative Chamber of Deputies in France at the time. This work is masterfully composed and designed, as Schiller had said, he was a master of composition. The curved seats of the curved row of seats in the legislative body mimic the well-fed bellies of the politicians. The drawing and the caricature of the individuals is marvelous. Study their faces and their expressions. This is a classic work, such so that it could represent our contemporary Congress as well. The exception is that in our Congress today, there are women, and there were no women in the French government at any time in that era. Thank goodness that's changed since the 19th century political system. Nonetheless, this is a great piece of art with a great piece of humor.
Well, King Louis Philippe, generally, he did tolerate jokes at his expense, but only once during his reign did he deal severely with an offender, and that was Daumier. For his depiction of the king as Gargantua, a giant with a huge belly and a ramp up to his open mouth. And on the ramp, the ministers are carrying baskets of food on their backs, just filling his mouth. And the people, the peasants, are giving everything they have to fill those baskets. So Daumier was sentenced to 6 months in prison. He spent two of them in the state prison and four in the mental hospital because the king wanted to show that one had to be mad to oppose and caricature him in that way. Makes me think of our situation now and whether it was intentional.
Well, Daumier's humor must have been a hoot in real life. But there's another expressive print in Daumier, which is called On the Railroad, A Pleasant Neighbor from 1862. The expression of the woman's face is priceless, and the fellow rider on the train in the train car is smoking a big cigar. Well, we all could probably relate to this in the age of non-smoking culture and the rules and regulations to public smoking. The smell could ruin the trip, and in her case, it does. It's cute and funny. In the exhibition, there's also a host of fine work by British artists, and there's a display case with a very funny print in a book from the 18th century. The title of the work is called Bum Shop, and the work illustrates, in a hand-colored etching, a famous fictional French designer named Derrière, which I think is just great right there. And he provides ladies with enormous bustles to enhance their butts, something that was popular at the time. Interesting enough, one of the clients in the center of the print looks like a man, and that adds a bit of humor to the butt humor of the 18th century work, The Bum Shop. And then another British work is titled Very Unpleasant Weather from 1820 by the British artist George Cruikshank. It's a print of people being pelted in the rain in the form of cats and dogs. Thus the impression, raining cats and dogs. I thought that was really clever. And it's the interesting expression of the British people looking up in the sky and seeing that they're getting pummeled by these cats and dogs made it a very funny work. And I'm very sensitive to pets, but in this case, it was acceptable humor about people's shock to see cats and dogs raining on them.
And how about Paul Gravarni's illustrated version of Gulliver's Travels? Gulliver's Travels is a very famous now satirical novel by Jonathan Swift, and Gulliver is living in a land populated by giants. So in this print, he's the queen's favorite, and he's traveling on her lap, this little person, and when her carriage stops, all these giant peasants are crowding into the carriage to stare at him. And there's another by Fragonard, The Armoire, where the lovers have just left their bed, and the guy is exhausted, and the girlfriend looks coquettish and happy. There's terrific stuff in here, the curtains, the garlands of flowers, the cupid, the little dog in the clothes, the light in the fireplace, just enough so that the main light can fall on the lovers.
I think the quality of drawing in these were amazing. I mean, there really was a sensitivity, especially in the Gulliver's Travel one. Mm-hmm. I mean, those faces peering into the carriage, it's just amazingly done, and the sense of light and perspective. James Gilray is a British artist that's well represented in the show, and there was a hand-colored etching of Midas transmuting all into paper, or gold into paper, which is very funny, and it's in color, and it's this golden-bellied Midas in an 1851 print. It's comic and amusing and contemporary. It's an interesting take on the turning of things to gold, as the Midas touch is known for in mythology, and a metaphor for the British state and possibly the British colonial power. James Gilray's work was reminiscent of William Blake, and I was wondering if artists like Henry Fuseli and other artists of the Pre-Raphaelite period were influenced or inspired by his works. They had done a lot of black humor and mysticism, and you see that also in the work of Blake, and they're all well done. Well, the last room in the exhibition contains more modern examples of contemporary humor, which also introduces the public to forms of graphic comic books, novels, newspaper funnies, and protest art and pop art, which had many humorous outlets. These are very important into the contemporary sense. Sheila, you've got to wave the flag for those Gorilla Girls.
Absolutely, the Gorilla Girls. So in 1985, the Gorilla Girls formed a group of feminist activist artists, and over 55 people have been members over the years, some for weeks, some for decades. And I'm going to quote from their manifesto. "We, the Gorilla Girls, undermine the idea of a mainstream narrative by revealing the understory, the subtext, the overlooked, and the downright unfair. We believe in an intersectional feminism that fights discrimination and supports human rights for all people and all genders. We have done over 100 street projects, posters, and stickers all over the world. We also do projects and exhibitions at museums, attacking them for their bad behavior and discriminatory practices right on their own walls. We could be anyone. We are everywhere. What's next? More creative complaining." I love that. And so in the exhibition here, there's on the wall a piece, and it's titled "The Advantages of Being a Woman Artist." Working without the pressure of success, not having to be in shows with men, having to escape from the art world and do your freelance jobs, knowing your career might pick up after you're 80, being reassured that whatever kind of art you make, it will be labeled feminine, not being stuck in a tenured teaching position, seeing your ideas live on in the works of others, having the opportunity to choose between career and motherhood, not having to choke on those big cigars of paint in Italian suits.
That one's good.
Having much more time to work when your mate dumps you for someone younger, being included in revised versions of art history, not having to undergo the embarrassment of being called a genius, getting your picture in the art magazines wearing a gorilla suit.
Well, I think, you know, there's a really heavy kind of tone in a humorous way about that feminist and really just female place in the art world. Mm-hmm. And that the Gorilla Girls type with some real vivacity and power at the time.
Yeah. I wanted to say that the end of their manifesto, where they talk about more creative complaining, in fact, that sort of undermines. It is creative complaining, but it's very real.
Oh, for sure. You know? There's no doubt about that. Well, the exhibition also has some wonderful work from the pop era, and it's represented with a few terrific screen prints. The most powerful one to me was Rupert Garcia's work, which was titled, and this is the title of the work, No More of This Shit. And it's from 1969, and it's putting a work in the social context of the civil rights movement and the Black Power movement, and the work is extremely appropriate. It's also an attack on corporate white America and exploitation. The Cream of Wheat brand with a white face has been replaced by a male kind of Aunt Jemima face with a chef's hat. This is simple and effective, and the use of line and color in the screen print is really, really well done. And then, of course, we have Andy Warhol, and he shines in this fantastic political print from 1972 titled Vote McGovern. Well, the work is extremely effective and simple, and it's elegant because it's really a portrait of Richard Nixon. That's great psychological pop and irony here. And this was used as a Democratic fundraiser for George McGovern running for president. It was very unsettling and very well done, and is certainly in historical context very funny. And then we have Roy Lichtenstein, which is the reflection on the scream, and it's a subtle allusion on Edvard Munch's immortalized work, The Scream, but from a perspective of Popeye's adopted son, Sweet Pea. That's funny right there. I mean, using the icon of Munch's painting and creating this parody is tasteful and brilliant. A baby screaming somehow is humorously warped and funny, and it's definitely taking the pain and suffering from Munch. These pop examples in the show are terrific.
Well, this I'm considering saving the best for last. Art Crumb. Art Crumb is a comic book author who became famous in the 1960s for creating Zap Comics and the character Mr. Natural. Crumb created a weird counterpart to Disney. He combined humor and social commentary and created icons for the cultural group of hippies, free living, drugs, sex, and rock and roll. His drawing style he borrowed from cartoons of the 20s and 30s, Popeye, Little Orphan Annie, Felix the Cat. As the critic Robert Hughes said, he was the Hogarth of the 60s. He survived because he was a chronicler and not very much a participant. And in Europe, he's recognized now as an artist for the museums. He said, "People have no idea of the sources for my work. I didn't invent anything. It's all there in the culture. It's not a big mystery. I just combined my personal experience with classic cartoon stereotypes." His influences were Bosch, Bruegel, Rubens, Hogarth, and Goya. And among the modern ones, George Grosz, Otto Dix, and Reginald Marsh. Because of Philip Guston, he's been kicked upstairs into the realm of fine art. The work in this exhibit is from the collection of the National Gallery. In other places in the museum, you can see works by Lichtenstein, who adopted the comic book as a form of communication, and paintings by Philip Guston, who also in another way used the comic strip as everyday genius in an invented style of cartoon realism. His paintings include cigarette butts, cans of paintbrushes, basically all this stuff that you're never supposed to put in paintings. And in a different way, he did what Lichtenstein did. He injected humor into the history of art.
Well, Art Crumb, who is very much alive, was shared in this exhibition. But these are very, very cleaned up examples of his work, because he can get very raunchy and certainly very un-PC. He's a terrific artist, and his sense of movement in the drawings is amazing with his pen and ink work. He's a powerhouse in bringing the graphic novel to new artistic and illustrative heights, and with all the contemporary permutations and combinations since. He took the graphic novel into new, unhealthy, humorous directions, which is a good thing, but he also has been one of the targets for the feminist movement, because he really depicted women in really kind of, I think, very, very cruel ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, something we always have to do when looking at art is to put it in the context of time, which is what we're doing here. This exhibit takes us through six centuries, And when we're looking at the show, we have to imagine the prince as a primary method of communication. Daumier went to prison for insulting Louis Philippe. So imagine the person who we call our president now putting artists in prison for insulting him. Just look at the New Yorker covers. We now have more powerful means of mass communication. But maybe the satire and insults aren't very different.
Well, the exhibition is timely and fun, and it's on until January 6, 2019. There's plenty of time to see it. Yes, there are some very humorous illustrated works there, but the show is a bit uneven in a way, in our contemporary sense. And there are some cleaned-up versions of things that we could see that are not necessarily included in the show, and I think this is a possibly the clean end of the spectrum, wouldn't you say,
Sheila?
Oh,
yeah,
Sheila?
Definitely.
And there is more contemporary humor in the political realm that's a great omission in the exhibition in the contemporary sense. Mm-hmm. That would be appropriate to include as well. You wonder about fears of censorship, shutting the government down, and the political tensions in this town mm-hmm. and the state of social consciousness lately in America had played a role in the curatorial decisions of the show. The exhibition is more funny vanilla, but it could have been a bit more contemporary spice.
I agree with you.
We all need a laugh from time to time, and many psychologists and social scientists say that it's imperative for improved health. And I think that's very true. All you have to do is ride the beltway around D.C., and you know a sense of humor and a good sound prayer are in order for the chaos of this place. Washington, D.C. could use some humor immediately. So we thought this exhibition is timely and worth seeing. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Experience art in the visual and everything you do. And thanks for listening. And let's listen to Lily Tomlin.
One ringy-dingy. Is this Mr. Hoover? Mr. Jedgar Hoover? Good. Then I have reached the party to whom I am speaking. Mr. Hoover, this is Miss Tomlin from the telephone company. It is my duty, Mr. Hoover, to discuss with you some of the abuses of your instrument. Yes. Yes, it does sound rather un-American, doesn't it? Now then, Mr. Hoover, I have your file here before me. Oh, yes, I'm sure that you have a file on me, too. After all, turnabout is fair play. Yes, it does sound perverted. Now then. Mr. Hoover, I have a delicate problem. I find that you and your agents have indulged in the illegal and unfair practice of wiretapping. Wiretapping. Oh, Mr. Hoover, listening to other people's conversations. Well, how do I know? From listening to your calls, that's how I know. Oh, no. Mr. Hoover, don't be rude. I'll make a loud noise into my mouthpiece and perhaps deafen you for life. Now, Mr. Hoover, may I ask, do you have a telephone directory handy? Good. Let us turn to page VIII and recite in unison. It is a crime under both federal and state law to use a telephone for annoying or harassing purposes, or to knowingly permit a phone under one's control to be used for such purposes. This includes calls in which the caller remains silent, etc., 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 etc. Oh, you do know the law, Mr. Hoover. Now, Jedgar, listen. Is there anybody at your place listening in? Everybody, good. Let's get right to the nitty-gritty. There's absolutely no reason for your people to skulk about, electronically speaking. You can get all the information you need from us. Probably a lot more accurately, too. Good, then we will be in touch. Oh, and Mr. Hoover, before you go, I must tell you how much I admire your vacuum cleaner. Hello? Mr. Hoover? Well, why do you suppose he got so huffy? I was just being complimentary. Everybody knows there's nothing like a Hoover when you're dealing with dirt. A gracious good afternoon. This is your operator, Miss Tomlin. How may I help you? Yes, this is your New Jersey operator. How may I be of assistance? This is Rome calling person to person to Mr. Nunzio Passanello of Nunzio Passanello and Sons Import and Export. Thank you. And may I have your name and the number in Rome from which you are dialing? Well, there's no reason to take that attitude, sir. Well, I don't care who you are. It's simple company policy. Well, if we're going to play 20 questions, I'd say your voice is a little too deep to be Sophie Loren. Pardon, do I have what? No, sir. I don't even have a godmother. You're the head of what? One of the world's largest fundraising organizations? Oh, sir, just a minute. Sir, I think I know who you are. Tell me, do you believe in brotherhood? I thought so. And do you believe in large families? I knew it. And do you always drive around in a big black car and wear one enormous ring? Two or three big rings. But, sir, in all the pictures I've seen of you, you're only wearing one. Oh, your magnificence. What do you mean you don't allow your picture to be taken? Sir, you're shouting. Sir, please, such language. We must have a bad connection. No, your magnificence. I'm sure. I didn't mean to. I know you've never had a bad connection. Sir, you, what is that? You'd like to kiss me on the mouth? Oh, sir, please. I know I have a seductive voice, but calm yourself. I've always admired the beautiful rituals of your institution, but I didn't know you fellows were allowed to do that sort of thing. A contract? For me? Well, thank you, sir, but I already have a contract with the phone company. Listen, Your Grace, I don't want to be Paula Pry, but just what does Mr. Passanello import?